welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. As many of you know, and by the title of this show, this podcast started out as a resource for men as they navigated their lives and their hero's journey. This was because one of my big transformations was from a nice guy, people-pleasing liberal into the rough-and-tumble masculine warrior dog that you see today. Today, I'm simply a man who is comfortable in his masculinity, his role in the world, and in his own skin. And this was done through my own initiation with the Mankind Project that I've talked about plenty, especially in those first 10, 15, 20 episodes. But over the years, something happened with the show. God was asking me to expand my repertoire of topics to include, well, all the topics that you've come to listen to over the years. Everything from the war with the deep state to the truth about COVID and the vaccines to extraterrestrials to Bitcoin and everything in between. And I've done my best to always try to show a through line and a hero's journey or awakening that was and is unfolding. God was picking the subjects and the guests. I was riding shotgun with microphone and ears and heart as open as I could manage. With that being said, today's a bit of a throwback, and I'm grateful to do this one. I don't talk about men and the state of masculinity as much as I did 10, 15, 20 years ago. I've taken my place in the narrative war as a voice of truth and a stand for courage, freedom, and strength in my tribe, which is humanity. Today's episode is another one with Dr. Mark McDonald, and we break out Jack Donovan's The Way of Men to talk about being a man today and what is at stake for men, women, and children. What is the difference between being a good man, nice guy, and being good at being a man? We'll explore this in depth. The world will always need strong, courageous men, and thankfully we still have them, men like my guest today. I've done many episodes to build bridges for the left. Today may not be one of them. Enjoy the episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Dr. Mark McDonald. Mark is trained in both adult and child and adolescent psychiatry at UCLA. He now works primarily with children in private practice in Los Angeles. His opinions on topics such as the need to reopen America's schools and the pandemic of fear in the United States today have been widely published in local and national news, including the Wall Street Journal and the Federalist. He is the author of both United States of Fear, How America Fell Victim to a Mass Delusional Psychosis, and Freedom from Fear, a 12-step guide to individual and national recovery. Dr. McDonald also publishes a podcast with Dr. Jeff Bark called Informed Dissent. Here is my interview with Dr. Mark McDonald. Okay, I am here with Mark McDonald, Dr. Mark McDonald, doctor, psychiatrist, author. Mark, welcome back to Base Camp for Men. It is good to have you again.
Great to be back here, Tony. Thank you.
You know, we did the – people really loved the episode we did just a couple months ago, maybe a month and a half ago, and you and I were chatting about men and masculinity, and you had recommended Jack Donovan's book, The Way of Men, and I really wanted to have you back on and have that book and the topic of men and masculinity be the theme, so here we are. And I guess I thought it might be interesting just to briefly sketch out kind of you and I, how we arrived where we're at, just a few points. So my listeners know that I grew up in a working class town. I was an athlete, with three brothers, one real brother and two stepbrothers. So, I was sort of surrounded in the culture of men growing up, especially playing sports. It was really part of my DNA. I had developed kind of this people pleaser thing. I was a horrible pleaser. I was kind of conflict avoidant. And it led to all kinds of problems. I couldn't say no to men or women. And fast forward, got married, moved to New York City, and was fortunate enough to do the Mankind Project's New Warrior Training, which was, you know, one of the big trainings that was happening in the mythopoetic men's movement. They do trainings all over the world. And, you know, scared shitless, I went and did that training. And every man, you get introduced to the hero's journey and the four archetypes of the mature masculine and all these things. Each man goes through 65 processes. And you're just way out of your comfort zone. And, you know, I came out of that training really in much better shape as a man. I lost the nice guy, you know, that whole BS persona that I had carried that was just, you know, it just wasn't working in so many ways. I wasn't good at being a man. And I think after the New Warrior training, I came out of that much better at being a man. And then it was a process of working on it over time, but I had a foundation that I could work with and trust. And, you know, coming off that training, I never again referred to myself as a dude or a guy, you know, none of that. I was clear that I referred to myself as a man after that. And I knew that I had arrived in the tribe of men with all that entails. So that's my short story. I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about, you know, your journey as a man, hitting the high points of who you are today as a man, I guess.
Well, Tony, I wasn't fortunate enough to be exposed to the men's movement. I was in college when it was taking off, and the people that were involved were a little older than me. I was a teenager.
Yep.
So I tried to find my own way. And as all men do who grow up with fathers, you start with your father as a model. I did not have a great man role model as a father from my father, although he was great in modeling a lot of things. And very competent and very full of mastery, but he lacked some other qualities that I needed to find elsewhere. And so I turned towards martial arts as one way to establish physical strength, confidence, and discipline, which was very helpful. And I met a lot of men who became good mentors in different countries and through different martial arts programs that I think really helped to stabilize me. And it really wasn't until I left Los Angeles and lived with families abroad, overseas in Europe and in Japan, that I started to see that there were other ways of embodying maleness. And it was so attractive to me because it was so foreign. And I think I kind of took on through osmosis a lot of those embodiments of manhood that I wasn't able to find locally where I was growing up in my own home and in my community. I think that saved me, actually. But it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough because, like you and like many, many men today, I grew up with a either implicit or explicit teaching that I followed that men should be nice, particularly nice to women.
Yep.
And by nice, I don't mean kind. I mean ingratiating. I mean, aconflictual or a conflict avoidant, as you described yourself growing up. People pleaser is a term that most people understand. That is the person that I strive to be because I was told that was virtuous.
Yep.
And that would be successful and allow me to accomplish everything I wanted to. Well, it does not allow you to accomplish everything. In fact, it gets in the way. And as I discovered when I became in my dating years, that wasn't a very successful strategy to attract and maintain relationships with women.
Right.
Yep. And it was only years later, maybe a decade or more later, that I came face to face with the reality that that approach was failing me in establishing a strong bipolarity between me and the women that I was dating, which is necessary for a healthy male-female dyad, at least a romantic one.
Sure.
And a sexual and erotic one. So it wasn't really until relatively recently in my adult years that I came across what would be, I guess, sort of known as the men's movement 2.0. It's not a men's movement, but it's tribes or groups of men in different countries that have instructors and that then meet together and learn didactically how to embody and express male characteristics, manly characteristics that are not only helpful to you as a man, but also strategically effective in developing and sustaining strong romantic relationships with women. It took me really a lifetime. And I feel for so many men today who don't have even the awareness of what's wrong, much less the pathway and the opportunity to fix it, who are consigned to a life of frustration, of depression. And in my practice now, I see young men particularly who have just withdrawn from society, from the world, from work, from relationships with women, and who are hobbled, handicapped, frozen, and just stuck basically in their, so to speak, parents' basement for their entire life. And it's truly tragic to see this in essentially a whole generation of men today in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things I loved about Donovan's book, you know, he distinguishes between being a good man, which is what you and I have just been talking about. Like, we were striving to be good men when we were younger before we had our awakening, and being good at being a man. You see a lot of, you know, these kinds of movements where it's like the Good Man Project, right? And like the Art of Manliness, all these things. It's like, when you look at them, it's like, it's still that feminized, you know, version of men. It's about, you know, make sure you're, you know, a gentleman, and make sure you're, you know, doing your community service. And it's like, whenever I look at that stuff, I'm like, they're missing the mark. They don't get this. This wasn't written by men that know what's going on, right? This is written, this is almost like a men's movement written by women. And I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about that, because I don't think Donovan was the first time I saw really it phrased that way. And I thought that was a really great way of phrasing it.
It's an excellent distinction, Tony. It was one that I hadn't even thought of explicitly mm-hmm. until I saw it in his book. And I thought, wow, that really encapsulates so much of what men don't understand today in words, and provides a distinction that is critical. Distinctions are very important in learning. You have to distinguish. You have to discriminate. That's what discrimination is separating. And we're not good at that. We're told not to discriminate. We're told not to differentiate. We're told everything is relative. Well, that's bullshit. The definition of a man, a man who's good at being a man, is completely distinguished from a good man. And it's distinguished essentially by one thing, which is culture. The people and the men and women who are pushing this good man syndrome are pushing it through a cultural lens rather than through a historical and biological one. And Donovan's point, one of his main points in his book, is that men, maleness, masculinity is not culturally dependent. It is universal. And anything that is not universal is no longer part of masculinity. It's part of culture. And culture is constantly being reshaped and reformed according to certain norms. And you can argue about what are good norms, what are bad norms. I would argue that today's norms are horrible, because we've renormed in just, let's say, 5 years, the culture of, just as one example, courage has been renormed to a culture of safety. And that started in 2020, 2021, when we began worshiping this altar of safety, because we were all told to be scared of a cold virus. That's one example of cultural renorming. And so to be a good man after 2021 meant to be wearing a mask, hiding at home, putting his dick between his legs, and acceding to all the histrionics of scared, out-of-control, emotionalized woman. Well, that's not masculinity, as Donovan defines it. That is actually being a good man in today's cultural mode. So I think it's critical that people who are thinking about masculinity, that word, understand and distinguish between what you described as the feminization of the good man and the real, eternal, unwavering, almost, it's almost a biological reality, like male and female are biological realities, of masculinity as it's endured through the centuries, all the way from the tribal period up to today. It has not changed at all. It is it is not just universal, it is eternal.
I love that. I love that. Why do I like gangster movies so much? Why do men like, women don't like them that much. My wife's like, oh my God, are you watching The Godfather again? Are you watching The Usual Suspects again? Are you watching, you know, Goodfellas again? And my son's the same way. My son's like, oh man, I love these movies. And so what is it about gangster movies?
Well, Donovan defines the four core traits of masculinity, and I mean the eternal and universal traits, as I just said, as physical strength, courage, honor, and mastery. That pretty much describes gangsters, doesn't it? They're strong, they're courageous, they take risks, they honor. I mean, you honor the family, you know, whatever that means. They're really into honor, right? And they're masterful. They're really good at what they do, whether it's assassination, whether it's extortion, whether it's corruption. They're good. They're really good at what they do. They're not incompetent. An incompetent gangster is a joke. He's not impressive.
Right.
So the people in The Godfather, by and large, except the ones that were killed off because they were incompetent, were highly competent. So this idea of the masculine, which should appeal to all men, is very appealing through the gangster because the gangster persona embodies masculinity. Mm-hmm. And you could say that, well, that's not a good man, though. No, exactly. It's not good. And this is really important. Donovan does not offer any kind of moral sanctimony or judgment, does not place that on masculinity. He says it's actually amoral. Masculinity is amoral, not moral, not immoral, amoral. It's lacking in morality. It's like secularism is by definition non-religious, right? It's lacking in religiosity. It doesn't mean it's good or bad. It's just, it's not part of religion.
Yep.
So for that reason, you can be a horrible, morally horrible human being and be incredibly masculine, which is exactly what gangsters are. They're bad people, but they're very manly. You could be a knight on shining armor and embody the same traits, physical strength, courage, honor, mastery. That's what a knight does, right? But why? What differentiates a knight from a gangster? The only difference, the only pertinent difference, is that the knight is good, meaning he's virtuous. The gangster is not virtuous. Mm-hmm. Now, you could argue about why we are drawn to non-virtuous people, probably because it allows us to act out some of our basic vice instincts through a screen without actually harming people. But put that aside for a moment. The reason why this is an important distinction is that in order to be good, meaning virtuous, not a pushover, a nice guy, you have to define through your culture what morality is. Mm-hmm. So Donovan puts that aside and he says, decide for yourself through your culture, through your religion, through your community, whatever it is that you want to aspire to and respect and honor in terms of values, morality, do that on a separate page. Support and encourage and embody your masculinity as its own project. And then, kind of like a gun with a bullet, is a gun good or bad? No, it's a tool. Masculinity is almost like that. Think of it like a tool. How you use it is what determines whether it's good. Guns can be used for murder. They can be used for self-defense, protection. It depends on what the function is and what the type of spirit is of the person who's using it. And I think that's why gangsters are so attractive, because men don't consciously want to be bad people, but they want to be masculine. And it's kind of fun, sort of like women often like to play the prostitute. It's fun to play the role of the bad woman or the bad man, meaning the immoral one, while still maintaining the feminine virtues, or say the feminine qualities, because prostitutes are very feminine in a lot of ways. They're very sexual. Gangsters are very manly, but there's a morality issue that is completely separate, but equally important, that has to be addressed.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I mean, the gangsters are so ballsy. That's the thing, you know, you're just like, God dang, they take these risks, and it's something that it's just like, it's something in us that we really admire, that kind of verve, and just, you know, they're good at being men. Right. And they're not good men. And you know, how would you define honor? And why is it important? Why is it important to men?
Well, you know, this is another reason why I think gangster movies are so attractive, because think about the inverse. Are there other male roles in films that are equally attractive, meaning equally masculine, that are virtuous, that are good? There aren't any anymore. We don't have Superman. He's gone. Mm-hmm. He was removed, right? Now he's International Man.
Yeah.
Now, Superman was very masculine. But he was also a good moral person, but he embodied all four of those qualities. I think the only characters that we see now in films that are masculine are actually bad men, because good men are good men. They're nice guys and they're not attractive. Look at the latest James Bond movie. James Bond in the last James Bond iteration became a eunuch. He became a house husband. He was wearing an apron in a kitchen, baking cookies, literally. And he gave his life for a woman, a woman. James Bond, his goal is to survive and live so that he can save humanity, like Superman.
Totally.
Like, if Superman gave up his life for a human, he'd be a loser. What a loser.
Yeah.
So this James Bond gave himself up, gave his life to save one woman. When the whole point of James Bond is that he survives, he perseveres, he gives up relationships because he wants to save humanity. So the reason why these gangsters are so attractive and why they have honor, which I'm going to define in a moment, is that the only real honorable masculine characters are gangsters now. All of the pussy-footed men, they don't have honor. So that brings us to, what is honor? Honor is defending through sacrifice, through risk of reputation, of physical body, of finances, protecting and defending what matters to you, what you value, what you, your family, community values. That's what honor is. Who does that today in movies? Only gangsters. Doesn't make them good, because they're defending the honor of the family, meaning the values of corruption and patriarchy in a bad way. But the characters that are in the superhero movies, what are they honoring? What values are they honoring? Transgenderism, feminism, so-called equal rights for men and women, DEI. That's not a value that men want to defend, want to take risks for. That's a political invention. It is not honor. So the only honor that's left to defend is kind of dark honor. It's honor that we all understand. We might not really want to be a gangster, but we understand why they're taking risks, because they care passionately about something that matters to them. All this other stuff that we're told that to honor through the good guy characters, it's all bullshit. That's why men are not attracted to the non-gangster roles today.
Yeah. You know, the one character I can think of, but it's been a while now, that displayed both good at being a man and having honor and being a good man was Aragorn in Lord of the Rings, right? He was a wounded kind of, his lineage was a wounded lineage, male lineage. But he showed incredible honor and strength and courage and mastery all throughout the movies that he was in. But that was a while
Agreed.
Ago. That was a
they
while ago.
They wouldn't film
dude.
It today, Tony. Can you no. imagine that movie no. being filmed today? No, no way in hell would they film it. They would have everybody,
they'd
gay,
have everybody
transgender,
woke.
Black,
yeah.
handicapped. There's no way that they would film that. So Aragorn would probably be a transgender woman.
Right. Yeah. The hobbits would be cross-dressing, transgender.
Correct.
They'd have to make, yeah.
Drag queen story hour in the Shire.
Right. Yeah, fuck. Oh, man.
That was not a recent film. How many years ago was that? 15, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, that is not new.
That
is an old
new.
Movie, and it's based
it
on a pretty old book. So your example, I totally agree with you, but it's not a recent example. This is actually just supports, exemplifies what I'm saying, is that you've got to dig back more than 10 years to find an example of good men who are actually masculine men, and they don't exist anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You know, one of the things that Donovan talks about is flamboyant dishonor and why it's such an insult to the male tribe. And, you know, I've known my fair share of flamboyantly dishonorable men, having grown up on the West Coast and lived in New York City. And I don't, you know, people automatically think gay and flamboyant. You can be flamboyantly dishonorable and not be gay. And I've known, to be straightforward, I've sat in men's groups with gay men who were not flamboyantly dishonorable. They were very honorable, and they took their place and the male code very seriously. So it's not that, but I was really raised, because I lived in liberal cities, that to tolerate a certain amount of effeminate men, flamboyancy, even men that disregarded the male code, you know? And so I just wanted to ask you, you're on the West Coast as well. How do you navigate that? Where do you place that in your compass?
I think what you're describing is a byproduct of the coercive and threatening culture propagated by the feminist movement and then taken on by media, politics, education, institutions, corporations, commercials, that threatens men with exposure, censorship, cancellation, unemployment, and even imprisonment, should they not, and I was going to say respect, but that's a too positive of a word, should they not kowtow to toxic femininity, specifically histrionics, emotional upset, immaturity, childishness, narcissism, which men have always been asked to stand up to, because that's the weakness of women. That's the weakness. The weakness of men is unrestrained, aggressive sexuality and violence. And that is rightfully and universally condemned and attacked. But we don't attack toxic femininity. We ignore it. We pacify it. We actually now have turned it into a virtue. And women are now on a rampage emotionally. And when men stand up to them, they are mobbed and they are taken down. And it takes a lot of courage to honor the real feminine qualities that men should be supporting and to stand up to the toxic feminine qualities. As an example, men now who are in an elevator with a woman or multiple women will often raise the pitch of their voice when they ask, "What floor do you want?" Because if they speak that in a low voice, if they say, "What floor do you want?"
Yeah.
They worry that the woman will feel scared, will feel impinged upon, will feel threatened by the tone of voice, and then may become uncomfortable. And God forbid a woman should be uncomfortable, even if it comes from a place of immaturity and paranoia. So instead of that, the man will say, "What floor do you want?"
Yeah.
So that the woman will feel, I'm with a feminized man who's not in any way ever going to harm me physically or express sexual attraction or desire for me, because the guy's acting like a fag in a derogatory way, you know, not as a homosexual, but as a fag, as a flamboyant gay man. And that makes them feel more comfortable. And so men today, heterosexual men, have now adopted the fag approach, the fag hag. As long as I act like her gay friend, I'm Teflon. I can get away with anything. And this is kind of true with flamboyant gay men. They can get away with the most disgusting, sexist, inappropriate behavior and comments because I'm gay, I can do whatever I want. Now, homosexual men who are men, they despise this. They hate this kind of behavior. They wish that all of this flamboyant gayness would just go away because they don't consider their sexuality to be of any relationship to flamboyancy, and it shouldn't be. Flamboyant nature has nothing to do with who you want to sleep with. It has to do with whether you're feminized. Yeah. And so these men who become feminized / flamboyant, I believe now, are largely doing it to appease, that's the word I was looking for earlier, I said kowtow, to appease toxic femininity. In other words, to treat these women as if they were little girls, rather than raise up these women, set the expectation, the bar higher, and say, you know, if you have an issue with owning up to your adult womanness, that's on you, not on me. Suck it up. Stop acting like a little girl, because I'm not going to act like a little boy. I'm not going to bring myself down to your level because you can't stand up straight. I think that's what's driving it. And I think it's horrific. It's driven by women, and I don't believe it's going to stop until women turn against this and say, stop it. We have to end this because we want real men, and we're not going to have them anymore unless we tell them it's okay. And not just okay, we want you to be men. We don't want the flamboyancy. What men can do it on an individual level, but on a social, societal level, I don't think maledom is going to be able to overcome this until femaledom steps up and starts self-policing.
You know, I'm seeing a lot, Mark. I'm sure you are too. I'm seeing a lot of these younger men. You know, 20 years ago, it was really easy, you know, and I don't really care if men are gay. I don't care. I have gay friends. It doesn't matter to me. Like,
yeah, sexuality is not the issue here.
No. And it used to be really easy for me. Like when I lived in New York City, it was really easy for me when a man started talking. You know, there was that like, oh, he's gay. He's letting me know he's gay by how
the gay accent.
Yeah, exactly. And now, fast forward to today, I can meet these young guys and I'm like, oh, he's gay. And then 15 minutes later, he's talking about his wife and two kids. And I'm like, oh my, I mean, it has totally fucked up my gaydar. Like, I'm just like, I don't know who's gay anymore, period. Because there's so much the feminization of how men talk, these younger guys, I can't tell anymore.
And you're absolutely right, Tony. I completely agree with your observations. I feel the exact same way here in LA. And I believe it's because of the appeasement.
Yeah.
You see it in stores. I just went to go shopping in a clothing store the other day. All of the men, all the sales clerks there were all acting that way.
Yep.
They had the man bun and the skinny jeans and the loafers without socks and, you know, the tight shirts and the high voice. And, oh, my God, that's such an amazing color. I think it would look great on you. And I think gay. Not that I care, but interestingly, you know, I start commenting about this girlfriend, that girlfriend. And then he'll say, yeah, you know, my ex, he didn't say my ex. He said my ex-girlfriend had the exact same reaction. So he's not gay. I mean, he's bi, but he's not. He's definitely not gay. So you're right. And I'm thinking, holy crap, this guy was flaming fag on me when I walked in the store. And he's apparently heterosexual, but he's acting like a West Hollywood drag queen.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's happening up here big time as well. You know, men have, and I noticed this in my son, which I'm like, really like, good for you. That we have a natural loathing for dependency, being dependent, right? We're expected to carry our weight. I coach soccer. I talk about this all the time. And, you know, I have told my 17-year-old, look, you are going to be judged by men and women, whether they tell you or not, whether you hustle, work, carry your own weight, get after it, show drive. I go, it is one of those things that marks if you're a good mate for a woman. It marks men will look at you and say, does he carry his own weight? Does he go the extra mile? Does he hustle? And you're judged by that. And I just tell my son, this is how men operate. So do not be one of these last guys to get something. Like, do not be a laggard in the area of being independent. And you can be interdependent. You can work with your friends on projects, but do not be this like hands out, you know, expect something for nothing. Don't have to work for things, you know. And then I noticed, Mark, that some of the younger generation, my son's 17, I'm talking maybe in the 20s, are like, oh yeah, you know, work ethic used to be a thing with you guys. You OGs had work ethic, but you know, we've created AI and we don't really have to work that hard. Like, the AI is going to do it. And I'm like, nope, you're wrong, dude. You are so fucking wrong. We're judging you. And if you don't think you have to get after stuff and make a contribution and carry your weight, you're being judged and not in favorable terms in the tribe of men. So that's kind of my take on it. I'm happy to see my 17-year-old has embraced this as like one of his ethos, basically. He's like, no, you got to work hard, man. Come on. So I just wanted to give you a chance to comment on that and what you're seeing out there.
Well, this is a consequence of the denigration of mastery, which originally was a skill set that you would express through your hands.
Yeah.
A craft. That was the only thing that men could do up until modern times. Certainly the Industrial Revolution, where things became mechanized. After that, all bets were off. And mind mastery, skill sets, academic skills became more valuable in the intellectual. Before that, men were judged on what they could produce, what they could make, because a man who couldn't do anything physically was useless.
Mm-hmm.
He might be supported by the community with donations and pity, but if he couldn't work physically and didn't know how to do anything, he was of no value to anyone. He certainly couldn't support a family.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. That's purely practical. Now, that's changed now because our government and our culture has derided labor as being lowly, and they've extolled diplomas, which don't have anything to do with mastery, really. They're simply filtering systems and processes, say the right thing, get the diploma, as a new way of determining status and worthiness. And unfortunately, because we have a collectivist economic system right now, where those who produce are robbed from, and their production, their money, is then taken by the government, confiscated, and then given to those who don't, there isn't really any social reinforcement for mastery anymore. In fact, the more that you succeed, the more that you do, the more that you produce, the more you lose, the more that's taken by the government. There's almost a negative incentive, a disincentive. So if you are dependent within a family on the husband, you can be actually kind of a loser now, because the greatest dependency is on the government. So a man who's dependent on the government is no different now than a woman who's dependent on the man in the family. The man who is dependent on his skills is no better than the man who's dependent on welfare, because everybody just gets a check anyway. So this has taken away such the incentive for men to be men in the mastery realm, and it's taken away the incentive for women to seek out men who express mastery, because the women don't even need a man, period. They don't even need the man's welfare check. They can get their own welfare check. So now dependency has shifted for male and female onto a higher power, not God, but the federal government, the state government, local government. I think this is a corruptive influence that's been born of government intervention through a cultural decline. I do, however, see that there is a running thread biologically in women, who even women who say they want to be quote unquote independent, for being attracted to men that can offer them resources. And that is, of course, money. It's also shelter. It's also physical care, safety, protection, and the ability to do stuff like build fires, like cut wood, like do electrical repair, car repair, especially as these things become harder and harder to find, more expensive, and difficult to sign up for. And I know women get turned on by this, even the ones that say that they want to be independent, they don't need men, they want to be able to pay for everything. There's something biological inherent, almost like the attraction of fire, you know, sitting around a campfire doesn't go away, in women to find men who are not dependent on government. So there's a battle going on between the sort of biological drive in women and then this cultural government drive to overwhelm it. And the same thing in men. Men are driven to master.
Yeah.
But they're also being told not to. So there's this conflict of forces. And it's unfortunately, I think on a macro level, I think we're losing. I think we're losing the battle of dependency. And that's why this time right now is so important. I think that if we are going to be successful as a population, we will have to beat down the dependency on government theme, and we have to replace it with familial community independence. I don't mean independence like independent women working for themselves. I mean subgroups of couples, families, communities that are dependent on each other.
Self-contained.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what we have to get back to. And if we don't, masculinity with all of its other virtues is just going to wipe down and wash down the drain and disappear. And we're going to wind up with this androgynous female, male, male, female quality in both sexes that is not, it has no reproductive value.
Yeah. The one like outlier, the one area where I still see a lot of that old male drive is in the entrepreneurs, you know, Seattle. I know LA is like this too. Seattle's a very entrepreneurial city. And those young guys, they're excited. They're working hard. A lot of them are, you know, and I see that part of it. The government's chipping away at the incentives to do that, but it's still an area where a young guy can go, I want to build this. I've got an idea. I've got a team. I want to build this thing that's going to make a huge, you know, impact for myself, for the world. So that's one area that I still see that kind of, you know, I'm getting up early and I'm getting after it and I'm not dependent on anybody to do this. This is my own street smarts and my own tech smarts. You know, we talked about dependency and creating dependence. The Democrat Party is creating a whole slew, to your point, of collectivist dependence. I've called it the party of the low T beta males, the weaklings who prefer to follow orders rather than stand up as independent and sovereign. We saw this in spades during the during COVID. Just here, there's just all this. I was just I felt like it was me, not that I'm like some great alpha, but I'm clear about who I am. But I felt like I was just being mobbed by like 20 beta males to put my mask on. And why aren't you, you know, this and that, all these Karens, these, you know, with their hysteria. When I look at the landscape now, I swear, Mark, I see all the alpha males, all the strong men that are good at being men are in the Republican Party. It's not to say every Republican is good at being a man, but the vast majority of men, the way that we're talking about it, with honor, courage, mastery, are in the Republican Party. And my question is, do you want, since we're in this culture war, this information war, who would you rather go to war with? A bunch of beta males, dishonoring the male tribe, dependent on the government? Or do you want to fight side by side with men who are good at being men, with gangsters, for lack of a better way of saying it? But I just wanted to get your take on it. Where we at, I try to build a bridge. I've done all these episodes where I'm like, I'm going to build a bridge for liberals. You know, I'm going to invite them over. But sometimes I don't want to build a bridge. I just want to call it out and just say, look, here's where the men are. Here's where the strong men are aligned. Do you want to be in a fight with them or with the feminized men? Which one do you got your money on?
I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think it's a very compelling argument you're making, and I agree with it. I have frequently described and distinguished the Democrat from the Republican Party as the difference between emotionality, passion, and common sense reason, that the Republican Party is the party of common sense, and the party of the Democrats is the party of emotion and immaturity and denial of reality. Republicans are mature. They accept reality. They tolerate the risks and vicissitudes of independence and are willing to make sacrifices. They're not narcissistic in the way that Democrats are. Those are the distinctions I've made, and I think they're borne out. But what you make as an argument is a very compelling one, and equally, I think, accurate, which is that Republican today is the party of men. Mm-hmm. And the Democrat Party is the party of women. Mm-hmm. And when I say women, I mean it in a derogatory way. I mean the effeminate, the toxic femininity. And if also the Democrats are literally the party of the middle to middle upper class, educated, childless white woman. Yep. The cat lady party, so to speak. That really is the Democrat Party. That is their base. Yep. Not the married woman, not the religious woman, the single, childless, government dependent, histrionic, educated white lady party. That is who they represent today. They don't represent poor, working class, certainly not blacks, Hispanics. They don't represent any of those people. Republicans represent all those other groups, all of them. And I think the Republican Party is also, as you just said, is now the party of men, because it's the only party of the two where you must express and embody independence, honor, physical strength, courage. Those are the attributes of being a Republican today. You have to wither attacks. You have to be honorable, meaning consistent in what you do. You can't be a hypocrite. You can't fight for free speech and then go and say, well, but it hurts me when it's hateful, so no free speech for hate speech. Yeah. You can't go out and argue for free markets and people making money and being paid well and then push for usurious tax rates and punishing subgroups that you don't get along with and robbing other people. You can't do that. That's hypocritical. So there's all these qualities that are tied to masculinity that the Democrats don't espouse. There's nothing masculine, nothing in the Democrat Party today. Absolutely nothing. And you're right. The Republicans aren't perfect. There are some men who are not really men. Feminized men in the Republican Party, but that's not the point. The point is that overall the representation of the party is for the masculine, and for the Democrat it is for the feminine. I think that's a simplistic but I think useful distinction between the two parties. One is masculine and one is feminine. I think that's a great way to describe it, because it's something that everybody can understand intuitively, because we understand the biological reality between men and women. Values, philosophy, politics, economics, those are all intellectual. equally important, but not as accessible to somebody. But everybody knows inherently what the difference is between male and female, masculine and feminine. And I think that it's hard to deny that. And it would be hard for someone to argue that Republicans are effeminate. That's just not an argument that anybody can really make, honestly, because they know in their heart it's not true.
Right, right. You know, there's a saying in the men's movement that only a tribe of men can bring a boy into manhood, that a tribe of women, a single mother can't do it. And, you know, I like you, I got my first impression of what it meant to be a man from my own father, who was a good dad. But like you, I needed other things. My dad wasn't, he wasn't a disciplinarian. He wouldn't really be talk rough and draw boundaries for me. And I needed to get that from, you know, there's a saying in the Mankind Project, like the father is often too close to the son to provide him with some of the rough edges that he's going to seek out and needs for his own development. It takes the uncles, it takes the coaches, it takes the martial arts instructors to bring the boy into mature masculine, the Mankind Project, you know. And I had the experience, I went and played college baseball for a really famous hard-ass drill sergeant of a coach named Ed Sheff. And man, he was the polar opposite of my dad, but at 18 years old, he's exactly what I needed. And we did Fight Club, Mark. We had Fight Club. Now, we had boxing gloves on and we had headgear, but you fought. You had to fight. You know, first rule of Fight Club, you gotta fight. And so many of the young men had never been in a proper fight. Now, you had to fight 4 times a season in front of everybody, including the coaches and your peers. And some might go, God, what an asshole. No, I was so grateful. Coach Sheff, he did not want any men on his team that didn't know what it was like to be in a fight. He did not want any pussies on the team. You didn't have to win the fight. In fact, the point was not to win the fight. I saw Coach Sheff after every fight. If somebody got beat up pretty good, you know, they would call it if somebody was starting to get dazed and confused. You know, there was a referee there and he's like, okay, that's it. You're good. Sheff never went over to the winners. He always went over to whoever lost the fight and he would kind of put his arm around him and just pat him on the chest. And he wanted the young man to know, it's not about winning or losing. I just need to know that you are courageous enough to step out there and know what it's like to be in a fight. I want fighters on my team. It's important for men to know that. And I mean, I know players that played for him. And when we talk about it, we're like, dude, did it transform you? It's like, yeah, it transformed my idea of who I was to be tested in front of all my peers. Nobody ever did that to me. And it was, you know, a woman might be like, oh my God, he's having them beat each other up. But there was not a single player in any of his programs that didn't revere, respect, love him for helping them become men. And so I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about that because you mentioned martial arts instructors. I think sometimes dads are hard on themselves. I can't be everything to my son. It's going to take some other coaches, uncles, martial arts instructors, and to bring him into who he can be as a man. It can't be all me. I'm in too close. And I guess I just wanted to talk to you about that. I wanted to share that story with the listeners and how grateful I was to, and how terrifying it was to be part of a fight club in front of a whole bunch of peers that you really respect and you want them to respect you and you don't want to get beat. And, you know, 4 bouts, you're going to lose at least one, you know? So, because one thing that Sheff did is if you beat up somebody, if you did really well, the next time around, you're paired up with somebody else that's better, you know? So he always wanted kind of even fights. And then he would judge where you were in the rankings, depending on how you did. But, you know, I'm forever grateful. I don't tell that story very often, but I think it's apt for our conversation and just how important other men are in the development of a young man who's coming of age and eyeing manhood. Like, what is this going to take?
Well, you've probably seen those videos. You can look them up on Google, Rumble, of recruitment, promotional films, short films, from Russia, from China, showing strong, physically strong men, filthy, covered with mud, running through water with heavy packs, carrying guns, smashing through logs, breaking shit.
Yeah.
That is the man. That is masculine. Look at the videos of our current military recruitment efforts. They are of fat, often minority, lesbian, single mothers sitting in an office, going through intel, talking about how it's great to have government security to pay for their baby that was abandoned by the father, that was artificially inseminated because they're not even heterosexual. The naming of the ships, the Harvey Milk, the vegan ship. We now have a vegan ship in the U.S. Navy that doesn't serve any meat. Women are now required to be part of every single engagement throughout the entire ship and even bunk and shower with the men. God forbid that. I mean, there's no way that's going to create any problems, right? Well, right. A lot of them are getting pregnant now. What a surprise, right? Mm-hmm. And then they're being let go. This is what it's like now. What you grew up with was a completely different time. It's almost hard to believe. Mm-hmm. What it exemplifies in your story is the truth that women do not raise children. They don't raise boys or girls. Mothers take care of babies, boy and girl babies, up until about age 6. That's a necessary bonding period for both sexes, and it's needed to have a mother at that time. Without a mother from 0 to 6, there are psychological developmental problems that occur. However, after about kindergarten, the parent that actually raises the children is the father. I don't mean clothing and feeding and all the hard labor and work. Women do that. That's true. I'm talking about developing the character and the personality and the values of the child up to adulthood. It is the father that does this. And that's why when fathers are absent or they're pussified, or they're eunuchs, you wind up with feminized, immature men and narcissistic, histrionic young women. And if you don't have that father figure, you need what you had. You need mentors, you need uncles, you need community members, coaches, martial arts instructors to step up and do that, to model those values for you, those disciplines, to encourage you to take risks and get hurt and survive, so that you can then take risks in the future that are even greater.
Yep.
Huge risks to your character, to your personality, to your finances, to your community perception, to your fame, to your physical body, which women by nature don't want you to do because their goal is to keep you physically safe and protected. And from 0 to 6, they better well do a good job. You don't want to be getting into fights when you're 3 or 4.
Right.
Because you are fragile. But after 5 or 6, you need to start taking blows. And mothers are always opposed to that. They don't want that. And so you need a man to counter that protective impulse and say, no, let him play. Let him fall. Let him get hurt. Let him wince in pain, because that's going to actually turn him into a stronger man. Because if he never suffers that, he's going to grow up in a bubble and he's going to wind up as an adult who is afraid of facing the world. Like that short piece of the movie 300 where the king shows how he went through the process of ritualized adulthood, where he was sent out into the wilderness with a spear and had to hunt a wild animal. I believe it was a tiger. And he could easily be killed. But they said, if you don't make it back, you don't deserve to be a man.
Yeah.
And he went out there in the cold with a pouch of water, a little bit of dried food and a spear and a loincloth. And he was attacked by the tiger. And he was able to use his strength and his courage and also his mind to fall back into a crevice and allow the tiger to get trapped so that he could spear the tiger and kill it before the tiger killed him. And he came back alive and he came back as a man. Now that's extreme, but it's exactly what you described. It's just a more extreme version. And we need more of that today. And this is why we need men involved, especially after the boy reaches child age, school age, five or 6 years old. And we're losing that. We're losing the fathers. We're telling parents that single mothers can raise children, that dads are not necessary, fathers are not necessary. And that is leading to a crisis of manhood. And now there's a whole other conversation about how it leads to a crisis of femalehood, femininity as well. We talk about that, the old joke, if the boy doesn't have a father, he's going to be in a gang. If the girl doesn't have a father, she's going to be on the pole.
Yeah.
Well, the hypersexuality becomes an issue with girls. who don't have fathers. This is why fathers are critical for both sexes. It's not just about raising boys into men. It's also about raising girls into women. And mothers don't do that very well either. They are not good at single-handedly developing a girl into a woman absent the presence of a strong father or father figure.
How do we come up with solutions? I mean, what I see is they're not being challenged and tested in ways that you and I are talking about. Like I saw, to your point earlier, I think some doctor said that 77% of young people are not in good enough shape to qualify for the military. Like,
I believe that's true. Yeah.
Because of diabetes and autism and obesity.
Even after having the bar lowered repeatedly in the last 10 years. So correct. Even with the lowered bar, that's almost 80% would fail all of those fitness tests.
So what is going to be the initiation? What is going to be the thing, is it something like the military or is it something else? Like, how do we construct the right kind of way to have the young person kill the tiger and come back as a man? You know, I have preached about the Mankind Project, but I'm starting to worry, it's a lot of liberals in that organization. I'm worried that, it's starting to morph into a more woke version where they're questioning what a man is, right? And I'm like, I can't send my son or any friend's kids or any friends on a training if I feel like the wokesters got a hold of it and it's not really a good initiation anymore. So what are some resources? What are some ideas to, it's one thing to say, they're not being tested. They, how do we help them find what they need to become, good at being men, basically?
Well, Tony, the institutions have utterly failed. And the long-term solution is to build new institutions to generate a revival, like the religious revival of the 1800s. Here in the U.S. today, it could be a religious revival. It could be religiously driven, but that's a separate argument. But certainly a revival of traditional values, of obvious common sense biology, that we need a revival of that. I don't see why that's such a high bar. I mean, that's just a survival, not even to succeed as a nation, just to survive. We need that. But that's going to take a lot of time because all the institutions have been corrupted and we'll need to tear them down and we'll need to build parallel ones while we're doing that in their stead. I don't know if we'll be able to do that. We certainly can't do that quickly. That's 100% sure.
Right.
So we're left with, well, what do you do now? Well, you don't have any, by definition, any institutions, any national level. Boy Scouts are over. There's no civic organizations left. You can't use the public schools because they've been completely corrupted by ideological perversions and miscreants. They're just camps, just like Mao Zedong's re-education camps in the 40s and 50s. So that's a dead end. Most private schools are lost. There aren't really a lot of churches left other than the evangelical Protestant churches and the Orthodox Jewish churches or synagogues that will support this. So that's over. So what are you left with? Well, the only thing that I think we really have right now, and this presupposes that you have an intact family. If you don't, I don't know what you would do. I really don't. Otherwise, other than just looking around for individual men that you can ask to mentor you.
Yeah.
If you have a solid family, the most accessible and I think obvious and successful path, if you're parents, is to homeschool your children. Mm-hmm. That is probably the most powerful single step you can take to ensure that your son and your daughter will grow up to be adult men and adult women with good values, strength, courage, honor, mastery.
Yeah,
homeschool is critical. I think that's the first thing and the most important thing that I would suggest for parents of school-age children.
I would go along with the way Israel does the 2 years of military. In certain ways, like if it wasn't going so woke, if they hadn't lowered the bar so much and they didn't shoot him with so many pharmaceutical vaccines, if you remove those things, a 2-year stint in the military where they go to boot camp, you know, grind it out, you know, learn how to handle a firearms, learn a little bit of hand-to-hand combat, learn how to hike through, you know, the rain, all these different ordeals that they face, and then serve for 2 years. So they're not so narcissistic, like grow up. I have a feeling under slightly different circumstances, something like that, and learn about the Constitution. They're not learning in schools anymore. Learn about the Bill of Rights, learn about the Constitution, learn about the Declaration of Independence, learn about our history in the wars that we fought, and get a good foundational patriotic education to go along with growing up a bit. That would be, to me, 100 times better than sending them off to some woke university where they're going to be gender studies majors and DEI, you know, agents. But, you know, the 2 points I made have me concerned for my own son. Like, he's like, I don't know, you know, I don't really want to be shot with a whole bunch of experimental stuff. Like, that doesn't sound great for my health. And he's also picking up, like, well, I'm hearing there's a lot of purple haired, you know, Taliban people going into the military. I don't know if I want to be around them much either.
I don't think the military, unfortunately, is a solution right now, because I think it has been corrupted. It's like I said earlier, all institutions have been corrupted. There is not an exception to that. I don't know of one that has not been corrupted by the left. Mm-hmm. Now, relative to college, I'm certain the military is preferable, but I don't think the military is a good solution.
Yeah.
The people who are running it are all woke and left, and those who are part of it, who are members of it, who are in teaching positions, leadership positions, the good ones were all purged with the experimental mRNA injection scam from 2020 to 2023.
Yeah.
Those honorable, and this is a great example of honor, these people sacrificed their entire career to defend their principles of bodily sovereignty and common sense.
Yep.
And say, no, we don't need this, we don't want this, and we will die fighting on the battlefield with no compromise without this injection. So don't even begin to ask us if our values are aligned with the patriotic vision of the country and the government. That's never been in question. We will not go be a part of this scam. And they all got fired. They all got sent out with dishonorable discharges. So those people are gone.
Yeah.
So they're in their stead, all the wokesters have come in. So I am not impressed. And I know several people who are in the reserves who dropped out in the last couple of years because they noticed that the focus of the teaching, the education, the leadership, the training, the fitness, everything was on woke culture. There was absolutely nothing focused whatsoever on winning wars, which is what all these other values fall into: physical strength, courage, honor, mastery. Winning wars is no longer the objective of the military. So why go into an institution whose objective is not actually to win a fight? It'd be like you going into that boxing ring as a child and everybody telling you, no, it doesn't really matter at all about how you perform or even if you win the fight. What matters is what clothes you wear and whether you're respectful and whether you've had vegan food beforehand and whether you agree with the marching orders that were placed on you by the DEI department. Other than that, the fighting is totally irrelevant. We couldn't care less. That's not important.
It's
a joke.
It is.
I don't think there's any institution right now that I can endorse to promote masculinity. The only one I can endorse is the family, potentially, and the community, and the homeschooling, and then finding communities of other people who are like-minded, who then build groups out to go visit these institutions where you learn civics by taking field trips to museums, to government offices. You're not going to learn it in school. And the military doesn't teach civics anymore. Maybe the Naval Academy does. I mean, it's like a few hundred people a year.
Right.
It's not a solution. The solution, in my view, to the masculinity problem in the short run, just like every other problem we're having right now in the country, is local and grassroots. Over the long term, I think we need to build a new culture, new institutions. But in the short run, if you've got a kid, you don't have a generation. You've got a few years.
Right.
So you've got to jump in. This is triaging. You've got to find a solution. And that means homeschool, male, female role models, finding others in your community that are not part of the institutions, and and build groups that can help support that with multiple children. And if you're out of school, don't go to college. Avoid that like the plague. Go to a trade school. Go work or study or travel overseas. Learn some kind of a skill. I'm talking about men now. Learn a trade. Learn something that you can do with your hands, and it's going to make you a fortune, and you're not going to have to take out loans, and you're going to be completely independent and a very attractive candidate for women to marry. Absolutely. And a better person. And then if you're older than that and you're still not able to figure it out and you got a job and you're now in your late 20s, then in that case, you need to start searching for online courses, books like, you know, like Jack Donovan's book, The Way of Men, that can on a very select level with a small group of people, either online or in person, start to teach and train you how to become the man that you didn't have the opportunity to have when you were younger for whatever reason and whatever failed.
That's great coaching, Mark. Really appreciate you. Well, thank you so much for coming on again and sharing your insight and your wisdom. So great to chat with you about this important topic. And keep up all the great work. Anything else you want to drop where people can find you and stuff before we sign off?
Sure. I write a lot about masculinity on my DissidentMD.com website. A lot of it is free. Some of it's paid. There's a mixture for everybody. And you can sign up for free and become a member for many of the articles. And you can even just type in masculinity and search, and you'll get 5, 6, maybe 10 articles. Also femininity, by the way, if women are interested, that you can learn more about this. Our podcast, Informed Dissent Media, or Informed Dissent is the name of the podcast, had an interview of Jack Donovan. You can go on to Informed Dissent, subscribe, search for Jack Donovan, and you can listen for an hour and hear what he has to say in his own words. So I do cover masculinity on Dissident MD and on Informed Dissent. And if you want to buy my book, I actually wrote several chapters on masculinity and femininity in my first book, which is called United States of Fear: How America Fell Victim to a Mass Delusional Psychosis. It is, I believe, eternal. Most of what I write about in the book is not directly related to pandemic itself. It's about antecedents to it and what follows from it. So I write a lot. I have a lot of references in that book as well, on sources for people who are interested in masculinity. And you can find that book through my website, Dissident MD, as well as the podcast. So all you have to remember is DissidentMD.com, and you can find everything there.
Beautiful. Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tony.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. It's always great to chat with Dr. Mark. It's going to be an interesting next couple of months, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.